The circus was in town again yesterday. It moved from Washington, D.C. last Friday and rolled into Raleigh yesterday. And, of course, I jest, sort of. As you know, Barnum & Bailey has hung it up, but Jones Street and Blunt Street here in North Carolina are hitting it hot and heavy. And, of course, House Bill 2 has been replaced with House Bill 142. So glad they kept the two in there, aren't you? Hi, I'm Mark Shiver. You have landed on What Matters in North Carolina. Still shaking my head over yesterday. Great, great debate in the House. Not so much in the Senate. You know, they're more reserved over there, and they don't take as long usually. But if you did not listen to the debate, you should. You can go to ncleg.net and click on House Audio. There's an archives link right there, and you can listen to yesterday in the House, and it was really good. And some of the folks on both sides, frankly, made some really good points. But House Bill 2 has been repealed, and some folks think that the Republicans gained a great victory yesterday. Some folks think the Democrats gained a great victory yesterday. I think that ultimately this plays well for our governor. We'll see. You know, I'm always looking at things 3, 4, 5 years ahead from a political standpoint. And I was, I don't think anybody really expected our current governor to be dumb. He's been in politics for a long, long time, but I think he's turning out, frankly, to be kind of shrewd and certainly a little bit more of a handful to deal with than Beverly Perdue was or Pat McCrory for the guys on Jones Street. But all that being said, the left is angry, the militant left, at Governor Cooper. They had the Horn Brigade honking at him yesterday. That's so awesome. And Indy Week, places like that, just, you know, writing scathing headlines. And yet, you watch. It's 2017. When the campaign cycle rolls up in late 2019, all throughout 2020, I guarantee you the ad is going to be, "I'm Roy Cooper, and I got North Carolina's brand back. I got our state back to work. I got rid of House Bill 2. Now, all the details, you know, people will have forgotten them. And I guarantee you he will try, and I don't know if he'll be successful, but he will try to make as much political hay out of, "I did what Pat McCrory couldn't do. I got House Bill 2 repealed." Anyway, I could be totally wrong, but that's the way I think. I think that right now, he's got some good material anyway for some commercials. We'll see. The folks on Jones Street are not stupid either, and Senator Berger and Speaker Moore, they got this thing out of the way. Supposedly, the NCAA is going to bring their games back here, but oh my goodness, what if they don't? There's an article in the USA Today that says the the NCAA must hold North Carolina accountable for their weak repeal. Oh, wouldn't that be a oh boy, wouldn't that be a mess if the NCAA says, "Well, House Bill 142 is still not enough, and you can't have any games for the next 10 years or whatever it is, 6 years." That would be unbelievable. And so those that were voting not to repeal House Bill 2, I think were not so much voting not to repeal House Bill 2 as they were voting to say, "I don't like being bullied by the NCAA or anybody else." And frankly, that would have been my main reason for voting against that had I had an opportunity to do so. I think we set horrendous precedent in our state by allowing outside entities to tell us how to govern. I mean, what's next? The NCAA does not like the fact that the speed limit on I-40 is 70 miles an hour, and they're going to pull the lacrosse championship out of Winston-Salem. I mean, you know, the old saying goes, as Chris Millis, Representative Millis, said yesterday on this very program, you let a bully take your lunch money once, he's going to do it again. And now North Carolina is, well, it's open season for any entity that we value, like basketball here in North Carolina, to say, well, we don't like this law, and we're going to punish you. And for that very reason alone, I would have said, well, you know what? I'm voting no, because I'm not going to allow you to bully me. And there's no bigger sports fan on the planet than me. And yet, you know, I can turn the television off as much as I would hate to. I don't, you know, I don't live and breathe NCAA sports. Well, maybe just a little bit. But anyway, AP Dillon is going to be our guest today. She's a co-founder and one of the authors over at AmericanLens.com, new website, relatively new. They've been around several months now, doing a great job. And we're going to talk to her, get her perspective, which is always unique and interesting, on House Bill 142. And I want to thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. Well, always a pleasure here on What Matters in North Carolina to welcome back AP Dillon, co-founder and excellent author at AmericanLens.com. And you guys are doing great. How do you think you're doing?
I think we're doing awesome, of course.
Yeah. No, I think you're getting a lot of favorable impressions, and people are saying good things, and the website looks great, so congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. We're very proud of what we put together.
Yeah, well, I'm honored to have some of my work featured there, so I appreciate that. And of course, you've always been one of the leading voices from somebody who's not an elected official anyway, very active in things that are important to you and your family and to the citizens of our state. Yesterday, obviously, a big day, kind of a, I thought the Ringling Brothers folks had retired, but I guess they came back through Raleigh one more time, and the repeal of House Bill 2 with the passage of House Bill 142, and just your initial thoughts on that whole thing yesterday.
There's a bunch of things that run through my head. One is that the Democrats basically should have took the deal back in December, and I think that Roy Cooper's seen the backlash from that at this point. His base doesn't seem to be particularly happy with him today. I think that we got an interesting set of compromises going on there. None, the least of which is that, you know, this basically sets a precedent in my mind that, you know, any organization, sporting organization or business or whoever it is, if they apply enough pressure that, you know, eventually they're going to get their way. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that this sets a bad precedent. I mean, it just says, you know, hi, you know, you harangue at us long enough, we're going to bend.
Yeah.
So I think that was a letdown for a lot of women and children in the state who, you know, have felt protected by HB2. But, you know, a lot of folks, you know, still think that this is discriminatory somehow. And a lot of the outlets like, a lot of the nonprofits like Human Rights Campaign and Equality NC and places like this have been touting a narrative about the moratorium on ordinances and that have to do with bathrooms and that sort of thing. I find this interesting, and I find that the language in the bill was interesting too, considering that originally, you know, one of the complaints about the Sherrill Ordinance was that they didn't have the power to do that. The municipalities, the towns and cities, they derive their rulemaking or their ordinance-making abilities from the state, and the state hasn't conferred these kinds of rulemaking ordinances and whatnot onto our cities. So, you know, they're not, these ordinances aren't kosher to begin with. So it's an interesting set of scenarios that we have going on, and now we've got the NCAA saying, oh, well, yeah, we see what you did there, and, yeah, we'll meet next week and we'll let you know. Really? So, you know, I'm not holding my breath. I have a feeling they're going to come back and they're going to say, yeah, we're still not coming, in yeah. which case this was all for naught. But
yeah, wouldn't that be a real slap?
Yeah, it would. And, you know, I'm fully expecting them to do that because, you know, this is something they in particular picked part of this fight. And you know, they said it doesn't. You know, they want to see if it lines up with their culture and with their beliefs. Okay, so someone asked the NCAA, "Do you have transgenders on your women's team? Do you have transgenders on your men's team? Do you have unisex facilities? You know, in within your own corporate headquarters, which is here in North Carolina." So, you know, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, you know, we can't really get bogged down in the details, though, can we? It's all about optics, and I'm being facetious. But let me ask you this, because somebody asked me, why would you not have voted for this bill, House Bill 142? And if you look at the language of the bill, you're kind of wondering, well, it's not really that bad. I mean, on the face of it, the main reason I wouldn't have voted for it is just to, I don't appreciate the NCAA and the ACC and the NBA bullying our state. But from a, just from a bill standpoint, everyone on the Republican side anyway is saying, well, it sets things back to the way they were, as if this whole Charlotte ordinance thing had not happened. As a citizen, as a female citizen, I mean, are you okay with that? Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, I think that regardless of HB2 or regardless of the Charlotte ordinance, I think people in general were still using facilities the way they had always used facilities. so I don't think that that changes one way or the other. And that's, you know, that's where the red herring is in this whole thing. The Charlotte ordinance basically opened up facilities so that anyone could go anywhere, and that was dangerous.
Yeah.
HB2 took that away and said, no, you have to go, you know, in the facilities as per, you know, your actual sexual orientation, not sexual orientation, your sexuality, whether you're biologically male or biologically female.
Right.
Okay? And, you know, that put that layer of protection back in place, you know. And I've had this conversation with a few people where, you know, they say, you know, that law is not going to do anything. You know, if someone's going to attack you, they're going to attack you.
Right.
And I say, well, yeah, of course. If someone's going to attack me in a restaurant, in a restroom, or in a locker room or a shower or someplace like that, they're going to attack me. That, you know, a law isn't going to deter them. However, my not having that extra legal layer of recourse against them should that happen, you're taking away a layer of protection for me in the courts that I can get my justice out of this person.
Yeah.
So, you know, tell me about who's the victim here again.
Well, the friend of mine texted me today and said, you know, we were the only state that had a law that said you had to use the bathroom according to your biological sex. And he said, I'm glad we got rid of that. It makes us look kind of silly. But and you have to admit, on the surface anyway, because of the media's, you know, proclivity to be liberal, we were getting hammered pretty good on this whole thing from a national standpoint, and the whole brand, so to speak, of North Carolina was really being put through the ringer. Now, as Lieutenant Governor Forrest accurately pointed out, our state's income and economy was not suffering one bit because of this, but perception being what it is things going to be better now for North Carolina without House Bill 2?
I don't think it's going to make an iota difference one way or the other. North Carolina has had a target on its back for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
We are considered the pathway to the South for progressives and for Democrats, and they have to flip our state in order to get to the rest of them.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to make an iota difference. If it's not this issue, it will be another one. You watch. Within 6 months, we're going to have a whole other set of problems going on. And this deal with 142 is going to set the precedent for corporate activism to come in here and to browbeat the legislators once again.
Yeah, I wish I could find it, because I was reading somewhere that it might have been on your website, actually, but somebody was saying that there's so much ambiguity in House Bill 142 now that it can be taken to be to mean several different things. For example, not having any kind of statewide policy, as it were, on the use of restrooms and stuff may give people the idea that, well, we can just, you know, do whatever we want, or we can...
Well, yeah, I don't think it's that ambiguous, because, I mean, if they're rolling it back to how it was before, there are facilities and public decency laws that go along with facilities like restrooms and showers and locker rooms.
Right.
If it's designated male, males go in there. If it's designated female, females go in there. So there are building codes and there are decency laws that are already in place for that, and those will just continue to exist. So I really don't think that's the issue. I think the language about schools, especially the UNC system, not being able to just, you know, decide one day that everything is unisex, I think that that was an important part of 142. However, the fact that 142 was an occupational licensing law that they were having trouble getting pushed through, and because they attached this to it and sort of overrode it with an up or down vote, it all went through.
Yeah.
You know, that to me was slick as snot. I mean, how, you know, nice one, NCGA. I don't know. The whole thing was just ugly this week, and I think we saw ugliness from both sides. You know, the press conference with Tim Moore and Phil Berger, and, you know, the deal that they were working on and the documents they provided. I think that was in part to force the hand of the governor's office. I don't think that was completely, that conference was on the up and up. But then again, Cooper turns around and says, you know, I never agreed to any deal. So wait a minute, your legal counsel, your head legal counsel and your top advisor were doing this without you?
Yeah.
HB2, the thing that you've campaigned on and can't go 5 minutes without talking about, they were doing this without you, really? In which case, why haven't they been fired or reprimanded? Or why hasn't there been a full statement about it? If you notice that the governor's office has not put out a statement about this little deal that was hammered out on the side with UDI and William McKinney, his senior counsel. There's no statement on their website. There's nothing.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, I mean, there's something that stinks there. And, of course, our you know, disinterested media aren't digging into it.
So what is that all about?
Well, there was an email that went along with the alleged proposal from earlier in the week.
Uh-huh.
That Senate Leader Berger and House Speaker Moore had, you know, they brought it out in their press conference, and they said, well, you know, we were going back and forth with, you know, Ken Udy and with Mr.
That's
McKinney,
right.
And this is what they said. And look, we, you know, the final thing on there was like, this looks good, you know, let's try to move with this.
Right.
And that was the last we heard of it. And, you know, Phil Berger basically got up there and said, you know, we've been talking with the governor about this, and he seemed to be on board with it. And now when we talk to him, you know, before coming here, he says, no, I'm not on board with it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was nastiness on both sides of the fence there. You know, I think that was an attempt to force something to happen. And they, you know, they were under the gun, and that's where it lands. And Sister Tolja has an article up on our site right now. It's called Roy Cooper's HB2 Chickens Come Home to Roost.
Yeah, it's very good. I've read that.
Yes, and it's true. I mean, the governor had campaigned on HB2. He raised money on HB2. He engaged in the economic blackmail that went on in the state with various different businesses who tried to put pressure on us. And, you know, he killed two repeals in 2016 by himself, and then he killed the most recent one. And then we had Senator Jackson trying to slip in his own repeal amendment onto another bill, which wasn't germane to the bill at the time. He's been harping about having a clean repeal, full clean repeal, and there he goes doing an unclean repeal by trying to slip an amendment in. You know, so there's been all kinds of shenanigans. And this bill, I believe it's the 11th bill, which is the final repeal bill, which finally went through. And I don't know that it's so much of a repeal as it is really a replace.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's locking things in until 2020, and I think that the Democrats lost big on this.
But I don't necessarily think I believe that, and I'll just play devil's advocate with you. Because in 2020, AP, and I tweeted this out yesterday, the first ad in that election is going to be, "Hi, I'm Roy Cooper. I got our brand back. I got that hateful HB2 off of North Carolina." And to add to that, you know, it's interesting that this House Bill 142 talks about 2020. Duh, that's when the election is. And can't you hear him saying, you know, do we want to go back to the mean, hateful ways of Dan Forrest and House Bill 2, or do we want to move North Carolina forward? I think Roy Cooper's pretty shrewd, and I'm not trying to, you know, say that I advocate for any of that, but just from a political analysis standpoint, I think he set himself up pretty well.
I don't know about that, because honestly, this thing is going to stay in place for his entire term.
Unless, yeah, but he's got,
you know, by some stretch of the imagination, we completely lose the House and the Senate, and you know, in the next cycle, which I don't really see happening. But this bill doesn't do anything that he said he was going to do. And I mean, IndyWeek, the far, far, far left IndyWeek, I tweeted this out. They have a headline up there that says the HB2 replacement is BS, and Roy Cooper, you know,
yeah,
you're a traitor, kind of thing. And they bemoan that he's broken his promise to repeal HB2, and that they're not going to forget this. And there were protesters outside of the governor's mansion today with signs that say, "We're not going to forget this, Roy." And you know, they're really mad.
Yeah.
His base is really, really mad. Yeah.
But then you know, they're mad today. They
yeah.
won't.
Yeah, and
won't,
you know,
be mad
a week from now, all can be forgiven. So you know, who knows?
I just think from a political standpoint, I think that that Cooper, I would have to say, came out pretty good potentially with material that he can use to campaign on. You know, I got our brand back. I got that horrible HB2 off. You know, I did what Pat McCrory couldn't do. You know how that goes. He can just make stuff up if he wants.
I don't think it plays that well for him. I really don't.
You know, not with the mainstream folks. I mean, you know, people like you and me and others that are in this, we might not look at it, but for the guy, you know, the average.
No, because then the narrative comes out. There were multiple times that he could have gotten the deal that he wanted, and he blew it. Three separate chances, and he blew it. And it wasn't just that he blew it. He's the one who actually physically killed them. Hmm. So, you know, I mean, and then he ends up with something that, you know, is imposed on him, and he has no choice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that leadership? No, not at all. That's the opposite of a leadership.
Yeah. Well,
that's,
I think,
like saying charge and then running in the opposite direction.
So what's next? Now that supposedly we can stop talking about House Bill 2, at least the General Assembly members and Governor Cooper hope that we can stop talking about it. What do you think is the next big issue to confront the folks on Jones Street and in the governor's mansion? Is it going to turn back to the budget now and tax reform? You know, boring, mundane things that we normally get in the General Assembly, or is there other stuff that we might see?
Well, I think that there'll be some of that. You know, Roy Cooper's rhetoric on tax reform is very Occupy Wall Street style, and I don't think that particularly plays very well. He's using recycled taglines like fair share and that sort of thing, and people, even in his own base, kind of roll their eyes at that at this point. But I also think that he'll pivot back to education, which, honestly, the guy's clueless.
Yeah.
I listened to him at a breakfast that was held not so long ago, about a month or so ago. It was an education forum, and he got up there, and he talked about basically dismantling school choice, you know, getting rid of vouchers, which thousands of low-income and minority students depend on. He completely blew off even talking about things like Common Core, which are, you know, hated as much on his side of the fence as they are on the Republican side of the fence. He didn't talk about anything like that. And when it comes to technology in the classroom, I heard him try to take credit for connecting all of the classrooms, which was, you know, getting internet connectivity through the classrooms for the whole state. This is something that started wheels in motion 2 years ago. He had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny to see, because at the same time that he's going around touring schools and talking about rural schools and this sort of thing, the lieutenant governor on the other side of the fence is doing the same thing, but he's talking to schools about, you know, infusing technology and making sure they're all connected and that they have the equipment that they need. He's still against Common Core. He's still pro-school choice, you know, whether that be choosing to send your child to a traditional public school or a charter school or homeschooling. You know, he just wants to make sure that children have the best fit for them. Meanwhile, the rhetoric from Governor Cooper has been, you know, parents can't be allowed to decide.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guy can't find an education policy with two hands. I mean, it just whoever's advising him doesn't know what they're talking about, number one. And number two, he really needs to, you know, find some other area to concentrate on, because education is just definitely not his forte, and he just comes off sounding, you know, canned. It's a bunch of canned campaign promises. There's a website called Education NC, which has been following both the lieutenant governor and the Governor Cooper around, you know, taking videos of them at these schools.
Right.
And if anyone watches their videos, one right after the other, they're going to know who knows which direction is up and which direction is down in education. And it's not Governor Cooper.
Who's behind that website?
There's several people. I do believe that their executive director, or the woman who's running it, is Mebben Rash.
Okay.
She's been involved in some other nonprofit associations in the state. And I believe she's married to a guy named Trip Stallings, who does work, I think, either with the Friday Institute or with the Hunt Institute. I don't remember which one, to be honest with you. But they've got an interesting team over there. There's one reporter over there named Alex Granados, who does some wonderful video pieces, and he has been very diligent in covering the State Board of Education meetings. His stuff is very informative and interesting. But then you've got the other side of the aisle there, where you've got this guy named Farrell Guillory, who's a UNC journalism school guy, and all he does is infuse decades-old political axe grinding into every single piece he does.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even read his stuff. It's nauseating.
Well, then I'll stay away from it. So what's next for American Lens? What are you guys working on that we can look forward to?
We've got a few things in the pipeline. I have a few education pieces that I'm working on right now. There's some interesting stuff going on in a couple of our districts concerning sanctuary cities and sanctuary schools and illegal immigration. There's also a related immigration piece that I'm working on as a follow-up to the Stolen Lives quilt, which was displayed at the March for Trump rally on March 5th. If anyone doesn't know about that one, it's on our website. All you have to do is search for Stolen Lives quilt.
Okay.
And what this is the families pull together quilts that have the pictures of their loved ones on them, and when they were born and when they died. And what's interesting about these folks is that every single one was killed by an illegal alien here in North Carolina.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And there's more of them than I care to count. The oldest one that I saw on the quilts that were displayed was around 65 years old, and the youngest was 18 months.
Wow.
So there's some heartbreaking stories there, and it's definitely worth your listening. Folks here, it's worth their time to go and read about these people. I have a follow-up that's coming with that. And we're also going to be taking a look at a little bit covered topic of teachers and being arrested.
Oh, boy.
You know, I mean, back in the 80s, everyone remembers the big scandal with Catholic priests and molesting children, and this, you know, is a nationwide scandal. Well, guess what? In the last decade, the biggest scandal has been teachers sexually abusing or having sex or being involved in inappropriate relationships with their students.
Well, we certainly want to.
The amount of arrests every week is absolutely staggering.
Well, I'm not sure if we'll look forward to that, but we'll certainly read it and probably be very disconcerted. But you guys are on top of everything, and we appreciate the work that you're doing there at AmericanLens.com. AP Dillon, thanks as always for being our guest, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, good to catch up with AP Dillon. Nice to have her on. And if you haven't checked out AmericanLens.com, be sure to do that. They are doing some great work, and you might even find an article that I wrote over there, Children at Risk in Charlotte, and that's all about, well, I'll just let you read it, but I'll give you a little tease. People that claim and swear up and down, oh, we all care about children so much, you know, and we got to pay the teachers more, we got to give more money to education, they're trying to indoctrinate children, young children, with all kinds of stuff that is inappropriate from a sexual standpoint. So I'll just leave it at that. If you want to read that, you can find it at NC Capital Connection. It's where it was originally posted, nccapitalconnection.com. And it's also being a featured article today at americanlens.com. Thanks to AP Dillon. Thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We'll have another great week for you. As always, coming up next week, we do appreciate Representative Chris Millis. Yesterday came on early and told us all about how he is serious about Elaine Marshall, Secretary of State, needs to either resign or face getting impeached. And did you hear that? If you didn't hear yesterday's show, please listen to that, freedomactionnetwork.com. 312 illegals commissioned as notaries. And I was talking to somebody in the office here today. It was like, wasn't four or five, you know, oops, somebody made a mistake. This was a pattern of behavior that's just 312. I mean, really? Gee whiz. Anyway, thanks to Representative Chris Millis. He also gave us his thoughts pre-vote on the effort to repeal House Bill 2 that was taking place yesterday. So, as always, thanks to all of our guests here on What Matters in North Carolina. And we hope that you have a great weekend. Hope that the Tar Heels win. Hope that the Hurricanes keep winning. And we'll talk to you again on Monday.